You're listening to Dragon Waves on the air with HKIS.
I'm Carrie Chen, your host for today, and I'm the Director of Marketing at HKIS, and I'm pleased to bring stories about our school to listeners. Today is April 1st, and it's an exciting day. Pools and beaches are finally open for the first time since December 1st last year. So in honor of today, we have invited onto Dragon Waves podcast one of our guests, Ella Healy, who is the Director of Aquatics at our Repulse Bay campus. Ella, welcome to the Dragon Waves podcast series.
Oh, hello. Hello, Karen. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so looking forward to talk to the community.
We look forward to hearing about your program. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been teaching at HKIS?
Talking about myself, I had a passion for swimming since I was five. I started teaching myself when I was five or six, and I learned how to swim on the back. So my parents noticed my passion and they put me to the swimming club, and I'm a traditional competitive swimmer. I started very young and I was competing for my country since age 7 and 8. So I was a record holder at some point when I was 14 and 15. I was swimming on the back. So backstroke is still my favorite way of swimming. I carry on with my passion for sports and physical education, and I did degree in physical education and coaching. I also have a master's degree in sports science. Before coming to HKIS, my post was in United Nations International School of Hanoi in Vietnam. But then later I moved to HKIS. So this is my year number 4 already in HKIS. I'm working mostly in Repulse Bay campus, helping students from lower primary and upper primary to learn how to swim. We have a wonderful aquatics department full of talented and enthusiastic people.
Well, it's very exciting to have you here at HKIS with all of your experience to build our aquatics program from the ground up. Tell us a little bit about your aquatics program and what your goals are.
When I arrived, I entered completely brand new facility, which was wonderful. It's an amazing facility, and we have a beautiful pool on the 7th floor with magnificent view for the Repulse Bay. What is special about our pool is that the bottom of the pool is changing. It's moving up and down, which allows us to set the depths, which is like perfect depths for our young learners. In our program on lower primary and upper primary, the core is a learn to swim program, and we're following the guidelines of American Red Cross. So it's based on learn to swim 6 levels. So the goal of our program to not only teach kids how to swim very well, but also teach them how to be safe around the water. So water safety is integrated into the program, and we cover this all the time. As our swimmers getting more advanced and more confident in the water, we also introduce them to other components of aquatics program. We teach our kids water polo. We introduce them to synchronized swimming. They have a chance to try and practice some junior lifeguarding skills. We even organize them in our pool open water experience. So when we take all the lanes down and we make it very deep for them, so they feel like it's open water. For those advanced swimmers, offering learn to train, so they learn the fundamentals of training and they can carry on this knowledge and decide whether they want to go competitive way or whether they want to be recreational swimmers.
That is just mind-blowing. A floor that moves according to the height and level of the child. That's just amazing. In the past 14 months, we have had the pools in Hong Kong close periodically, and we were open for a little bit in the fall. It's quite funny hearing parents in the community share on the parent chats, say, we've got aquatics coming up, it's online. I really wonder how they're going to teach online swimming. Can you share a little bit about this online program that you've had over the last 14 months?
No one could expect it happen. If somebody would tell me 2 years ago that you will be teaching kids how to swim without pool, I would just laugh to that. And this is typically what the reaction is to the people. How do you even teach that? When the pandemic started in January 2020, I was in touch a lot with my network, as with my colleagues from other international schools, just checking with them, what are you doing, guys? How are you handling this? And pretty much what I heard, most of the aquatics department, they were just closing down. It was this approach, well, there is no swimming, then there is no aquatics. I guess we're not teaching kids. And so a lot of people were redirected to support PE or maybe support other parts of the school. While for us, we really gave a thought and we believed that our department with such a diverse approach towards how we teach aquatics and what we teach in aquatics, we felt like, no, we have our way to go through this as a department and still keep our aquatics identity, let's put it this way. I was very fortunate that both principals on both campuses, lower primary and upper primary, supported us in this idea, and they let us run online aquatics lessons rather than assigning us with PE. So of course, the first couple of months were very difficult because we didn't know how long it's going to be and how serious we have to take it. But we were having a lot of fun with kids because we wanted to cheer them up, first of all. And we saw them online, so we wanted them to have fun like they always do in aquatics. In that couple first months, we were doing a lot of, like we say, crazy things. We were filming ourselves in the showers, getting under the water and blowing bubbles in the buckets. We were dancing about swimming. We were singing about pool rules. We were pretending there were different characters when we were running our lessons. I was a frog. I was a shark. I was a grandma. Some of us were wolves and we were snowmen. So we have a Santa Claus coming and we had the whole Santa Claus workout. So we just wanted kids to learn aquatics, but also just to keep up that spirit. And of course, practice swimming exercises with us too. But then after a couple months, we realized it's not gonna finish that quickly. So we started really rethink our approach. And at that time, R1 swimming unit was coming up. Those are the youngest swimmers in our school. And we were expected to teach them online without seeing them in person. I found that it was very challenging even to think about this. I had to first convince myself that this is even doable. And then I had to convince parents that the times with kids and us will be valuable for those little learners to be in front of the screens and spend their time with their swimming teachers doing what? So I really had to think about this. Moving forward, we were focusing a lot on character building, like getting kids more independent and more confident, especially the younger learners. Like, for example, how do you pack your bag? Can you pack your bag by yourself? How do you put your swim cap? How do you put your goggles? Then, of course, we were working a lot on developing physical literacy. And being on dry land is a perfect way. So, yes, we did a lot of exercises, and some of them were very swimming related. Some of them were just fitness exercises. So it's many different ways to develop physical literacy, which is very, very important for young learners. We were integrating science and technology to enhance students' learning. Students did have a chance to use the iPads. We were practicing freestyle moves, and we knew what is the best way to do them on dry land. And then they were videoing themselves, each other, partners, and they were correcting each other. So I know that when they come to the water, they know exactly what they need to do, which was awesome.
So it sounds like you made very good use of that time. I hear that you also had some guest speakers come to speak to the students during aquatics. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. We wanted to invite guest speakers because usually when we're swimming in the water and when the pool is open, we don't have that amazing opportunity because we want to spend a lot of time teaching kids how to swim and use that time. But since we were on dry land, I invited guest speakers to come and join us. One of the guest speakers was our wonderful associate principal from upper primary, Jenta Brandstetter. She's a passionate swimmer herself, and she's been swimming for many, many years. She also participated in triathlon, and she enjoys a lot of different water sports. Then we also were very fortunate to have an Olympian swimmer. Her name is Camille Chang. Our students could relate a lot to Camille because she comes from international school system, and she became swimmer of Olympic level thanks to her training in international schools. So Camille Chang is now getting ready for Olympics 2021. And of course, she has to be very resilient to train without water. And so she shared with our students what dryland activity she's doing and how she's able to access water, but on very limited ways. Right. Like she has to train in a bubble that is specifically created for the Olympic swimmers. our one more guest speaker, it also was our very own staff from middle school, Andrew Bridle. Andrew shared with me his passion not only towards swimming, he's an excellent swimmer, but also he has a passion for surfing. And then Andrew started to tell me all those stories about him going to the different beaches in Hong Kong and saving people. I thought like this story could be also shared with students because it relates to the safety and water safety of our students who also go to the same beaches.
We are actually lucky to have Andrew with us today on Dragon Waves. I've invited him to come and actually share his story. Hey, Andrew, thank you for joining us on Dragon Waves.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Ella. How's it going?
Hello, hello.
Hey, Andrew, can you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do at HKS.
Sure. I'm Andrew Bridle. I've been at HKS for 3 years. I'm the teaching assistant for the middle school PE team. The whole team had to do a Red Cross swim training course, and Ella ran that, and that's how we became friends.
So you're a surfing aficionado, from what I understand.
And yes.
Good, good. And you've spent a lot of time in the waters, and you shared with Ella and also the students about some situations in the beaches and the waters that you felt was important to share with students and also with the community. And so I thought it's great that you're here on Dragon Waves to share with our listeners.
Well, yeah. So because of the pandemic and because of all the government beaches being closed, all the wilderness beaches remained open. And that meant that normally those beaches are a little bit quieter because you have to trek to them. But because all the other easy access beaches were closed, everyone was starting to go to those beaches. And those beaches, there's no lifeguards, there's no support. And yeah, you're pretty much out there on your own. And the one beach in particular, Tai Long One, which is up in Sai Kung, is known for the best surfing waves in Hong Kong. So that's where I spend most of my time because I'm a passionate surfer. It quickly became, we weren't just surfers on a weekend basis. We became on rescue duty because a lot of people were either finishing a hike or just camping, and they decided, oh, I'm going to go into the ocean, have a little dip, and not really understanding how dangerous the sea can be, and then getting caught in some quite sticky situations where me and my friends had to help quite a few people. And yeah, it was quite some very scary moments, but luckily everyone was okay. But it was a big eye opener for a lot of people, including ourselves.
You've taken on a bit of a community role.
Yeah.
What do we need to do out there in the beaches to make sure that this is addressed?
I wouldn't want anyone to start changing those beaches because the reason they're so beautiful is because they are so exposed. But I would say, and me and my friends, we've even made signs to tell people that there are strong rips in the ocean. The ocean is unpredictable. You really need to be aware. You need to understand the risks that you are taking going into the ocean, especially an ocean where there's no one looking out for you. So yeah, I always tell people before you go swimming anywhere, you need to know the beach. You should ask people if you see people camping or you see a shopkeeper or anything like that. You need to find a little bit of information before you just go rushing into the water because it can be very dangerous. And honestly, if we weren't there for some of these situations, I think it could have ended really terribly. It's a scary thought because we started to think, oh, if we don't go next weekend, maybe someone else is going to get in trouble. And it literally became a thing where every weekend we were having to rescue at least, I would say, 4 or 5 people, not all myself, but, you know, across the surfing community, you'd just get these swimmers who would just get caught out, not understand what they were doing and need rescuing.
And so would you recommend a minimum swimming level or a particular piece of equipment that casual swimmers should have with them to equip themselves?
Definitely, you need to know how to swim. Before you go into the ocean, you need to know how to swim.
Good piece of advice.
This is number one. It's funny, but you get people who finish a hike and then they go into the ocean and they don't know how to swim, but they're like, oh, I'm only waist deep. I'm fine. I can stand up. But then a wave comes and they get tumbled around a bit, and then they get shifted because there's underwater currents, and then they find themselves in an area where it's out of their depth, and then they can't swim. So the number one thing is make sure you know you're a confident swimmer. Make sure as well that if you are going for a swim, look around, see who else is there, because if there are other people there, then they can also keep an eye. Now, if you had a surfboard or a boogie board maybe, or a ring, that would definitely help, because obviously you can hold on to that and use that for some support. But then saying that again, if you don't know what you're doing, you might not drown or anything, but then you'll be on this support and you might get taken out, and who knows what could happen. So you really have to be careful. You also should be aware of the weather, because the weather changes. You're outdoors. Things are always changing. And you need to know, like, okay, is there a storm on the way? Is the weather meant to change? Is the wave meant to pick up? Yeah, you just need to take a little bit of responsibility before you get into the water.
So do you think you're going to continue going out there every weekend, playing the safety patrol?
The wave season is kind of over, but I still go out there because I've actually got a house out there, which I split with a bunch of friends. And so, yeah, that's where we spend most of our time because we love being out there in the outdoors. So we'll be keeping our eye out. We always put a red flag up actually on the beach to try and warn people. And it's quite funny because after completing the American Red Cross course, I got given a whistle, and I've actually used that whistle multiple times. So I'll continue doing that, and I'll continue looking out for anyone that is in need. But yeah, I do feel that people really need to be aware and need to take some responsibility in the risks that they are taking, because it might look beautiful, turquoise water, and then the next thing you know, you're fighting for your life trying to get back to shore.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for doing that service, and we're very proud that you're part of the HKS community and really contributing to the Hong Kong society in this way. So thank you.
Thank you.
And Ella, we thank you for the work that you're doing in the aquatics program at HKS. I think it's really important. Clearly, as Andrew said, people need to learn how to swim. I wish you all the best of luck now that the pools are open and that you can start getting kids in the water.
Thank you so much, Gary. I'm so looking forward to see kids back. Thank you.
Our next guest is David Poole, the head coach of the Hong Kong Island Stingrays, which is the competitive swim club that operates out of the HKS pools in Tai Tam and Repulse Bay. Welcome to Dragon Waves, David.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thanks for bringing me on.
Tell us about the Hong Kong Island Stingrays Swim Club.
Hong Kong Island Stingrays Swim Club is a not-for-profit, parent-owned, coached-run swim club that runs predominantly out of Tai Tam campus. We've been here for around about 25 years now. I think we carry a tradition of being, you know, an athlete-centered, process-driven, goal-oriented, performance-focused, competitive swim club. However, we are not only just competitive. We do have participation pathways and development pathways within our program. I think we take pride on producing passionate, educated, responsible students within HKIS and within Stingrays.
And how do you work with the aquatics program that Ella runs?
In terms of working with HKIS, we're sort of the next step in the pathway. So once swimmers at the moment pass through levels 5 and level 6 in the HKIS aquatics, they're obviously signposted to different programs. We are one of those signposts. So once they've actually accumulated all the skills that's needed in HKS Aquatics program, they can come and join us within our RAISE program, which is the first level of our club. So that's sort of where the pathway goes. We also work together closely and have worked together on CPD, some coach education, and regularly have some meetings just to discuss what's the best route from Learn to Swim through into the competitive program.
You know, Ella described her online program, and I understand Stingrays has been running a similar online fitness and swim academics program for your swimmers. But in recent weeks, when pools looked like they weren't opening up anytime soon, I think you guys decided to try something a bit different. Can you tell us about your latest training sessions?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, we had a robust land and education program throughout the whole of COVID, when we've been shut down, mostly running on Zoom. Then we obviously transitioned into a land face-to-face program. Lately, though, after some successful swim races we've been doing with limited training in open water, we started an ocean swimming scene. So we've had the kids down in Taitam, around the Red Hill area, actually swimming in the ocean in open water. So it's been really, really exciting to see. And it's really been a nice step from Zoom and then land to actually get back in the water before the pools opened.
That's a big step. How have your swimmers responded to open water swimming, especially the younger ones that have been doing it for the first time?
I think it's been really surprising how quickly they adapted to the environment. You know, open water swimming is completely different to the pool. You know, you don't have a black line to follow, right? You know, when you look down at the bottom, you know, pretty much you can't see anything if it's deep. There are times where you might see some fish or some things on the bottom if it's a clear day, but ultimately it's a completely different experience, a completely different sport, so to speak, different technique, different breathing patterns. So it's been pretty exciting. And the young kids that have came in, you know, at first they were a little bit cautious because it is a big, wide open space, but once they got into it, and after two or three sessions, they sort of get used to sighting, get used to swimming in straight lines, aiming for buoys in the water. So I think it's excellent. You know, I think the kids loved it. You know, we had around about, I think, 80 people sign up for open water over the past 6 weeks. To see that, you know, was just excellent. I think as a club, we just needed to evolve and adapt to the environment. You know, with COVID, this was the one outlet we saw. And then we tried to incorporate a little bit more running, and we will try and continue with that when we get back in the pool and maybe have a triathlon branch to the program again, which I think the kids really took to and really enjoyed.
I wanted to ask you about safety. So obviously going out into open water for the first time, what kind of safety measures did you put in place as a coaching team?
Yeah, well, it took a long time actually to put things together. You know, we're now 14 months into the pandemic and we've just started doing it now, I think on month 13. Lots of risk management, risk assessment. So we created a NOP, normal operating procedures for open water, an EAP, to buy a lot of equipment, you know, for safety cover. So basically, you know, everybody first aid trained, everybody is coached, is a swim coach. We have out on the water, we have paddle boards and kayakers. So we have safety out. We have a sort of 1-to-8 ratio per person in the water. So if we have 8 swimmers in the water, we have one person or one safety cover on. We always have a coach on the pool deck. Or not the pool deck, but we always have a coach on the pier that is in sight. We put lots of measures in place in terms of athletes need to swim with swim buoys. So maybe if you live in Red Hill or you've been in the school and you look down on the water and there's loads of little orange buoys popping around that swimmers, so boats can see them. You have swim caps that are luminous in color. So there's lots of risk management that we've had to do to get it over the line. We obviously have, as a club, upgraded our insurance for ocean swimming and triathlon. It's a great opportunity to continue with training in some sort if we get shut down again. Right. So we wanted to get a program set up that would enable us to continue to provide a service even if we get shut down again, obviously within the government guidelines.
Great. So, David, I want to ask you about competitive swimming in Hong Kong in general. You know, pools have been open and shut for the last 14 months, and we know that swimmers are some of the most dedicated trainers and most consistent trainers on a daily basis. And so what do you see are the impacts to competitive swimming, given the start and stop, and are top swimmers able to thrive?
I think Hong Kong has probably been hit the hardest in the world in terms of shutdown. If you look at most other nations throughout the world, we've been hit the hardest in terms of number of days out of the pool. So really, I think it's a massive impact, and I think it'll be unknown right now. I think we're obviously discussing competitive swimming, but I think the biggest impact will be in learn to swim, which will affect competitive swimming down the road. We obviously live on an island, we live around water, and we've not had for 14 months, some people have not had opportunity to learn to swim. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously going to affect what comes into our competitive program down the line. I think it's massively understated the impact of COVID on swimming. So I'm not sure in terms of competitive swimming in our club, it's been a difficult time at the top end, obviously the Sports Institute has been running. So those athletes have been training throughout, but we need to replace those athletes at some time. And that might be the difficult thing because of the, not so much the ability for swimmers to get back up and rebuild, but the swimmers that we've lost to other sports, or the little swimmer of 7, 8 that can't learn to swim and will be lost forever within competitive swimming.
So it sounds like you and Ella have similar kind of goals. Certainly in her program, it's just getting people in the water so they can learn to swim. So she said the same thing.
For sure, yeah. You know, we need to work together because we are both here to make HKIS better and to make Hong Kong better. That certainly should be our goal.
What about our competitive and, you know, our elite swimmers within the program? Are they able to recover after these 14 months?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think when you look throughout the world, you know, all athletes now that have came out of a lockdown or came out of a break in training have swam faster times than ever off limited training. I wouldn't even call it a recovery process. I would maybe call it a fresh start or a restart. Build the engine and then fine-tune it and then make the drops in time. I think as coaches, we've had a lot of time to connect, a lot of time to talk, a lot of time to think about and review the past. And I think in swimming, we've maybe had a mentality, or we certainly have, based on previous results, Olympic Games results over and over and over, we've had a mentality of quantity over quality. And I think with this shutdown, you start to look at results of swimmers coming back and look at what we're actually doing in the water and think, well, maybe we need to adapt and fine tune our methods and our philosophy, and what we're doing needs to be more on the quality side more than the quantity side. So I think absolutely, I think we'll be better coaches from it. I think the athletes will be better athletes. And I think, we need to adapt and change our methods. It's certainly something I'm going to look to do over this next sort of period, just change and tweak a little bit of what we do and do everything with a little bit more quality. And I think kids will recover for sure.
As you're thinking about adapting the program with the learnings that you've had over the last year, what are some things that you're thinking about changing?
I think frequency of training, length of training, intensity of training. So I'd imagine our frequency of training will go down a little bit. The length of the training, we might hold it. But then the intensity will go up, but the volume or the amount of training we'll do will go down. Maybe a little bit more focus on dry land, because I think we need to be more robust, more athletic. And then implementing mental skills training alongside the pool training and then inside the pool training also. So it's all very well, I think, sitting in the classroom and talking about mental skills, but then we need to be able to reinforce and do it within the training session.
So with the pools opening, obviously, this week, and so kids will go back to the swimming pool. You're saying that you'll continue doing some open water swimming through a triathlon program. So explain to me how a triathlon program works.
Because the environment we have in here, you know, in Hong Kong, you look around, right? You know, there's water everywhere. We have a great environment to be able to swim, to run, and to ride. I think, you know, just around the school grounds, you know, we have opportunity to swim in the pool, opportunity to swim open water. We have opportunity to run around a track or run cross country. And then obviously around Red Hill, which is the great K Loop, we got an opportunity to ride. It's something we're looking to incorporate into all the squads because not everybody is going to be a swimmer. And if they're good at running and they're a solid, good swimmer, then triathlon is a path to take. You know, we've had a lot of history within Stingrays previously with triathletes, Bailey Brown, who is now on the Hong Kong team up at the Sports Institute.
Do you think more kids will be interested in triathlon now that they've tried open water swimming and they've done this program with you?
Yeah, we actually had a few younger kids that said, well, I actually enjoy open water swimming more than a pool. For sure, you know, if you really think about it, you know, you're swimming out in the open water, you're looking around, you've got beautiful scenery, beautiful environment in Tai Tam, compared to looking at a black line, like you can see the appeal, right?
Definitely a silver lining to all this.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about the swim community, sort of the fellowship that these swimmers have together? I see them in big bunches all the time. Can you describe how it's been for the last 14 months?
Yeah, they're a very tight group, right? Because they train some, you know, the younger ones 5, 6 times a week, the older ones maybe 8, 9 times a week. So they're very tight. They're very close. I think in a normal situation during COVID, I think all the high school kids, they meet together. You know, they have lunch every Wednesday and they have breakfast on the weekend. So it's a really tight community to have. During COVID, this was difficult. One of the reasons why we sort of went on a Zoom-based program at first was more just to connect and keep the kids together. It's not the same, but they still kept that connection. And we set lots of challenges. We requested the videos back and there was, I think, some young boys, middle school boys, they would get on a Zoom together, not with us present, and they would do their challenges together and they would record their Zoom and then they would send it to us. So I think when you're part of Stingrays or part of any swimming club, really, you're part of a family, right? You're all there for the same reasons. You all have the same mindset and you all stick together. I think that's one positive thing about competitive swimming is, you know, you have friends for life. Your swimming friends are the friends you still speak to 10, 20, 30 years down the line.
Dragon Waves on the Air with HKS is produced by the Advancement and Marketing Office and its podcast production crew. Special thanks to Ella Healy, Andrew Bridle, and David Poole, our guests for today. Waylin Chong, class of 2020, for recording our intro, and Laura Lawrenson and Daniel Solon, our lower primary music teachers, for creating our theme song. See you next time.